Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
First auction property I won was $1,700. $1,700. Now, I do want better. It wasn't because it was so cheap that I was like, yay, because I could afford it. It was when I went to pay for it. They didn't even accept the money. They were like, oh, no, just a deposit here. At the time, it was 10% or 600, whichever is highest. It's still 10% in most auctions.
Okay.
The minimum now was like 1,000 instead of 6, but whatever. So 1,700, give her the $600 down. I have 30 days to pay the balance. But I was realizing that 30 days is a long time. I could put a deposit down and then sell it for more than I owe for profit.
Hey, business owners, what if I helped you get access to $50,000 in business funding for $1 a day? Would you be interested? Well, inside of my Credit Mastery community, you're going to be getting exclusive access to our in-depth training program that's worth tens of thousands of dollars to give you the exact strategies you need on how to restore your credit and on how to properly structure your business. You're also going to be getting access to a financial consultant with over a decade of experience in the funding space that'll help you reach your financial goals in half the time it would take if you were to do it on your own. And we're going to be giving you 2 coaching calls every week that'll give you the exact banks you need to go to get access to $50,000 to $100,000 in business funding. This is the same community that helped Pat get access to $50,000 in funding from Chase, helped Alvin get access to $8,000 in funding from Amex, helped Matt boost his personal credit score by 150 points, and helped Donna delete a bankruptcy from her credit report. So if you're interested, click the link above or below this video to join now, and we'll see you on the other side of success. Let's go, family.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today is a very special day because our guest today is a mother, wife, investor, entrepreneur, mentor, coach, philanthropist, and real estate investor extraordinaire. To date, our guest has done well over 7 figures in real estate acquisitions and has leveraged her expertise to teach others all across the country on how they can do the same. Whether she's on TEDx stages teaching on how wisdom, opportunity, resources, and knowledge are what truly lay the foundation for generational wealth, or teaching debt-free strategies on how aspiring investors can acquire their first investment property, the value that this woman provides to anyone looking to have success in real estate is why her impact in the space isn't coincidental. It's confirmation. And today, she's here to do more of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, I'm here with the one, the only, Dr. Jamisa Bennett. How are you, family?
I'm doing well. Can I clap for myself?
You can clap for yourself.
Yeah. I need you to come with me.
Okay.
And introduce me to the world next time.
That's my way of knowing I did a decent job. I appreciate it.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. I'm very happy to have you on here. I think this is definitely a long time coming. We were talking about it off camera about how I've been following you for a very long time from afar, and you've seen what I've had going on from afar. And I'm excited to have this conversation. I always love sitting down and talking real estate, but more specifically with people who eat, sleep, and breathe it and who have really done.
Yeah.
Right.
Done the work.
literally. So I'm very excited for this conversation. I know it's going to be a very fruitful one. But before I do that, I did an okay job introducing you.
I think you did great. Yeah.
But I appreciate it. But nobody knows Dr. Jamisa better than Dr. Jamisa for herself. So for those who aren't familiar, let's get them familiar. Who exactly is Jamisa Bennett?
Ah, that is such a loaded question. All the things that you named, honestly, I feel like I'm just a fixer. I'm a helper. I'm a giver. I'm the eldest of 10. So it's literally in my nature to help people become better versions of themselves, whatever that looks like. Originally, real estate just kind of like fell into my lap. Originally, I went to school to be a clinical child psychologist. So my background has always been in assessing, observing, and figuring out how I could add value. So for me, yep, definitely an investor. Right now, I own 33 properties, including a hotel.
Let's go.
A plethora of land, a little over 500 acres. definitely a mom. Mm-hmm. Five little humans. Mm-hmm. One is somewhere in the background.
Somewhere here. which I love.
Yeah. I donate. My causes usually go to like foster care. I'm in the process of opening up a group home now. But mm-hmm. I'm into the transitional housing space really heavily. I'm a great friend.
Yes, you are.
I'm hilarious. Very so like I feel like on my bucket list, I'll do an impromptu, like one of those stand-up things. I'm going to do it. One day.
I've done stand-up before. I can help you out.
Really?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I think I'm super duper funny.
Let's do it.
Yeah, just a caring, really kind, mm-hmm. not nice. I had to get that word out of my vocabulary not too long ago. We'll mm-hmm. talk about why. But a really kind, caring, considerate, just a person who takes life by the horns one day at a time type of thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about a lot of the success you've had up until this point, but mm-hmm. as you know better than I do, it was a lot of work that took you to get to this point. I want to unpack some of the work that went there.
Okay.
Let's go back to 2013.
Okay.
You're 19 years old.
Mm-hmm. You're Wait, in... was that 2013? Was that 19? Somewhere in there.
There you go. Okay. You're in school studying to be a psychologist. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, your grandmother passes away.
Right.
You find out that the property that she owned, mm-hmm. your name is in that property, mm-hmm. and you're now responsible for that. Walk me through what that time in your life looked like.
Fortunately and unfortunately, it was very chaotic. But by that time in my life, I was used to chaos.
Okay.
Like, I learned a lot of my problem-solving skills came from just overcoming adversity my entire life. Mm. So I have learned to thrive in chaos, like, figure it out. It's funny, even today, like, with some of my closest friends, they're like, yo, the world is on fire and you are so calm. Mm. I'm really non-reactive. I'm trying, like, for the most part, I always try to prevent. Mm-hmm. Like they say, a ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Amen.
I don't know if you've ever heard that before. Mm. But so, yeah, at this time, I'm like, wait a minute. I knew I was on her deed. I was well aware of that. I signed the paper. She pressed me a little bit, too, to sign it, mm-hmm. which let me know her intuition was really strong mm-hmm. or she knew that she wasn't in the best of health.
Right.
At the time of signing, it really didn't mean much, but my responsibility to her was very present there, too. Coming, taking her to doctor's appointments, taking her grocery shopping, like being what I could be for her.
Mm-hmm.
So here it is. She passes away, and my family are like kind of going at it about the house. They're making decisions about it. They're changing like the locks on the property. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of stuff happening, and I'm kind of sitting back watching the mayhem unfold, mm-hmm. so to speak. My great-grandmother, who is my grandmother's mom and my grandfather's grandmother,
mm-hmm.
She raised me for the most part. And so she was like, hey, are you gonna tell them? Mm-hmm. Like they are having a whole, like, knockout, dragout. I think you should intercept. And I'm like, no, bro, what you think will happen to me? Like, mm-hmm. look at what they're doing to one another. But inevitably, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. I end up saying, hey, look, nobody's doing anything. It's mine. And they're like, what? So, of course, that heat kind of turned on me. I'm the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some choices to make. So my very first thought was to keep the property and move in it, right? Because where I was outside of college, we paid rent there.
Right.
And I was like, oh, we can live somewhere for free.
Right.
However, the amount of work that needed to be done, it was a ton of deferred maintenance. There was some, like, tax abatement stuff going on there. So typically, if you're older, you're able to get in certain programs in which they will defer your taxes for you or they'll defer certain bills for you.
Right.
When you pass away, though, however, it's all due at once.
Mm.
I didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going on here? And it just was one of those things where you have to use it or lose it. So my intuition set in. I was always brave. I was always a decision maker. And I hate when I hear people say, don't sell grandma's house. Like, I mean, I get it in theory.
Right.
But in hindsight, if you do not have another choice, don't lose it. Like, if you have an opportunity, of course, go buy it back if you can, right? Which I was able to do. But do it. Use what you have. If God has given you something, sometimes we, like, hold on to pain because we're familiar with the grip.
Mm.
Sometimes it's okay to use what you have as leverage to gain more,
mm-hmm.
right? You think about it. Everybody's afraid. Even my grandma, she said, this is all we have. Like, she told me that.
Yeah.
She was absolutely right. That is all we had. Had I lost it, we wouldn't have had anything.
Mm.
And you think about how I was able to multiply that one opportunity. So, yeah, I ended up selling it at an auction. All of this is just, I mean, not at an auction. I ended up selling it and then revisiting the auction, but I sold it to avoid the auction. That's what I meant to say. So I ended up selling it to keep it from going to auction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where my journey began. But everything was just being aware of my surroundings and learning as I go. Like, when I sold it, it was literally because the neighbor asked me, hey, you're having a hard time here. Here's the number to the realtor who helped me purchase this home.
Right.
Maybe he could help.
Right.
He gave me an inch. I took him out. Called the guy, set up a consult with him. We listed it. I think he was with Berkshire Hathaway, if I'm not mistaken. I think my very first sale was with Berkshire.
Okay. And then the rest is history.
That's it.
Let's go a little bit deeper into the story. Okay. You talked a little bit about how that was your intro to real estate, right? Having to sell your grandmother's property. If I remember at the time, you sold it for about $150,000 cash.
Mm-hmm.
Learning more about your story, I think it was something else, in my opinion, that started your real estate journey, because you sell grandma's house.
Right.
You get the money.
Right.
Trying to figure out what's next.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it wasn't this lump sum of money that you had, I think, that started your real estate journey.
Right.
It was actually a conversation I believe you had with a financial advisor.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, because even with the lump sum, I didn't get it all at once. 30 was an escrow.
Okay.
It was separated, too. That was my first really big check. So mm-hmm. the bank didn't even give it to me, like, right away. The realtor who helped me sell the property
mm-hmm.
introduced me to his friend. He mm-hmm. was a financial advisor. We were sitting in a room, cold and clammy, no real emotion there. and a guy just pretty much said, hey, give me all your money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna like take it, you know, I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much no real intro besides a name and a handshake.
Right.
No real information on how the money was going to be invested, what I could expect in the process. And so I began to ask questions. I'm very inquisitive,
right.
as was noted earlier. And so he was a little irritated with my line of questioning,
mm-hmm.
almost as if to say, you don't understand what I'm saying anyway, which is far from, I have always been really intelligent, a latchkey kid. I've read books my entire life.
Right.
So I was like, dad, you know, this is my money, right? And then I asked a really good question, which was rhetorical. I said, so I give you all of the money, and what if I need some? Now, in the meantime, I need it right now,
right.
like at this moment.
Right.
He said to me, you come back at 55, I think the age was. My grandmother passed away at 56,
mm-hmm.
so keep that in mind. If you need money before then, you can borrow from me. I can borrow my own money back from, you know, with the penalty.
Mm.
And so I was just using girl math at the time. No real, like, logic there, but give you money for free and then pay to get it back. Hand you over money and then borrow it. Borrow? How am I borrowing something that's technically
math
mine?
Ain't nothing.
And then he kind of went into Roth IRA. At the time, it didn't make sense. Now I have a better understanding of why it could be beneficial in some aspects. But I'm a kid then.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's explaining it to me. I'm like, well, what else? How does this work? How does that work? And he's like completely irate. He's completely irate at this point. And I'm just like, no. And I mean, if looks could kill, he's like, what do you mean no? Like mm-hmm. the audacity of me to say no.
Right.
He's like, well, what are you going to do? Go buy some houses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one house got me this much. Clearly. Something can be done on the other end of that. And so I walked away from that table, fully encouraged. Everything that I do right now, my success is a trauma response.
Okay.
Believe it or not. And so I left the table feeling encouraged, not because I learned more, but because I was, like, determined to prove that I could do this on my own. Like, thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you for your help, you know?
I love that story so much because going back to the financial advisor and, like, his response,
mm-hmm.
I think he had the response he had probably because he was just so used to
yep.
people like yourself.
Probably.
That will stumble and tumble in his office and be like, hey, I got $50,000. He would just say, yeah, I'll take care of that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And without any rhyme or reason or any second thought.
Yes.
Here you go.
That happens more often than not, if you can believe it. So September the 19th,
mm-hmm.
the day after my 31st birthday, I was hired by the NBA to teach a whole class to their new rookie draft class. So it's the rookie symposium that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of fear that was in the room, right? Mm-hmm. Now, not that I'm afraid because I'm talking to a room full of athletes, because I had, like, some athlete clients, you know, leading
right.
up to that point. But the fact that they just didn't understand money.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about kids, 19, 20. And it directly mirrors some of my older clients. Like, I have Hall of Fame clients. Like,
mm-hmm.
some of my clients who made it through the NBA, retired out, they're much older. And the same lack of knowledge surrounding money is present in both, you know, different age groups. And it's just because they have handlers. They say, hey, hand over the money, and this is what's going to happen. If they even say this is what's going to happen. Most times they get a talk that sounds something like, hey, you worry about basketball, I'll handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. They don't know what that handling actually looks like. And so I've partnered with different financial advisor agencies. We actually have something called Courtside Wealth Partners. I'm sorry.
Awesome.
That help this. So my partner is actually a licensed financial advisor. I am just a person who educates and motivates a person. Like, it's okay, take a deep breath, you know. But when I'm talking to different financial advisors, they have their mind made up that they can do a better job handling someone else's money than that said person.
Right.
And I think that's really incorrect just because this is somebody's life
yeah.
that you're talking about. Basketball is not your life. Football is not your life. Whatever you do as a career is not your life. You have to think about when you are done doing what you love to do, what is the next phase?
Yeah.
Life happens in phases, right? And so when he said that to me, I didn't get offended, not like right off the bat. I did understand his positioning, mm-hmm. But I just knew better. Like in my spirit, knowledge-wise, I didn't know anything.
Right.
But in my spirit, I knew what I was capable of given the right opportunity. So we talked about time earlier. Time is a really important asset.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as important as money, if not more.
Yep.
Because given the right, you know, experience with the right amount of time and execution, you can literally figure out anything and master it and learn it. So whereas though you can go down to zero, you can have a dollar left in your bank account, that experience does not go away.
Ever.
You can recreate any process over and over and then, you know, multiply the dollar. And so when I'm thinking about it now, like I was young and it was offensive. However, I wasn't offended because I knew. But what I do here now with Rosebuds Investments is I do it for the people who don't know, who
yeah.
aren't sure, who are discouraged, who are afraid. You got every right to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. Money yeah. is intimidating.
Can't
especially
be.
When you don't have any. It's like, oh my God, this is my one shot. I can't mess up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but the lesson is in the mistake, usually. So mess up a little bit. Not all at once.
Not too much.
Not all at once.
Yeah, yeah, not too much.
But yeah.
This is such an important conversation because it's so much layers. Like, mm-hmm. for starters, and you and I were kind of talking about this slightly off camera, the buzzword now, generational yeah. wealth and wealth building and all these other different things. And what we see happening right now is a lot of times you'll see people that because they're in they're striving for, whether it's making their first million or
right.
building wealth, they're so quick to find the first person that they think knows a million times more than they do and
right.
say, well, I got this $10,000. Instead of me taking a couple of lumps and bumps and figuring out how I personally can
right.
turn this 10 into 20 and beyond, let me just dump it in this person's hand and then
yeah.
cross fingers and hope things work out.
Yeah.
And more often than not, that's usually where you hear most of the scam talk and everything else go on.
I agree.
Because it's like, you know, a lot of times people are investing their last, giving it to
yep.
dude that's they exactly seen off Instagram
said.
That said he's a
yeah.
multi-million dollar,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever it may be. And it's just like, to your point, I was even thinking about this on the way here. You can never truly lose when you bet on yourself and take your own money and invest it.
Yeah.
Either you may lose a portion or, God
mm-hmm.
forbid, it may be all of it, but now you have the experience to say, okay, cool, what do I need to do to make sure that doesn't happen
yeah.
again? Or you get a return,
yeah,
right?
I've said that before.
It's
I've
just
said
like,
that before. You're right.
It's the truth,
yeah.
you know? So it's just like, but I think to your point, so many people are just so fearful. Like
right.
They don't know what they don't know. And it's just like, I would much rather, and even as I say it out loud, it's crazy, but this is the logic some people have. Let me just give my money to a stranger
mm-hmm.
who I think is more qualified than me and pray that the best happens.
Yep.
I just think
yep.
that that's extremely, for me, it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. But everybody's thought process and pattern is different. So
yeah.
what you're saying is absolutely correct. I don't feel like it's a good idea because no matter what stage a person is in their life, they are always constantly learning.
Yeah.
So depending on what phase the person that you're giving the money to is in their life, your money is pretty much experimental.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know how to do something really, really well, but the fact that I'm even taking your money means A, I need it, or B, I'm trying something new
yeah.
that I don't quite want to exhaust my own funds on,
mm-hmm.
and we about to mess around and find out together. Either way, it's not really logical. So you talk about like millionaires, multimillionaires. They have different categories. Of course, you have liquid. Somebody can be worth millions of dollars.
Yep.
Just asset-based, no liquid, right? A person who is a multimillionaire, it's very rare that they need your money.
Yeah.
Or they need you to be a part of something beyond a certain point. Like if somebody's asking you for 10, 20, 30,000, it's like, yeah, right? Like, because what multimillionaire needs your extra little
right.
10,000, 20,000?
Mm-hmm.
Because really, if I'm being honest, just in the stage that I am in investing, 10,000 is not putting a dent anywhere for me.
Right.
20,000 is not. Honestly, we got to be talking like 50,000 or more to even make an impact. I'm investing, I'm purchasing hotels. I'm like developing things. You know what I mean? So if a person is like, Harry, here's my last 10, what can you do? I mean, respectfully, not much. And
mm-hmm.
and it may be better for you to take that and just kind of figure it out the same way that I did. Everybody
mm-hmm.
that you're looking to learn has had the experience,
yep.
which is why you trust them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're skipping steps, even if, because there's some people who will take a 20, That might be a down payment on a hard money loan. They are successful in a good flip. They do give you your cut, you know, with interest. But did you learn in that process?
Yeah.
Because if I'm here making you money, me as the mentor, I now work for you. You as the person who's the mentee, did you actually learn? Were you a part of it? Were you at the closing table? Do you know how to read a HUD? Do you understand what your closing cost is and what it goes to? Mm-hmm. Do you understand the draws? How did we deal with the contractor? You know, how was that scope of work written up? Mm-hmm. Why were these things required? Why weren't these things required, right? There are processes that you might have to be front and center to learn. And I think a lot of these people who are like shoving out the dollars, they're not present. So they're kicking out the money because they're saying that they don't have time. But if you don't have time, you really don't have the money. Because if this goes wrong and you did not learn what went wrong,
yeah,
you're out of money. And you're out of the opportunity to figure out how to get that bet.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said before, you know, we started rolling, as an investor, I make calculated risk.
Yeah.
So I'm able to, before even choosing what I'm going to invest in, I'm able to look at it from a perspective of, okay, how much do I have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
I'm never investing more than I have to lose. Like, right. I'm never the person putting everything in a pot. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. Some things about success is really common sense stuff that you've heard a million times,
mm-hmm.
but it really only applies when there's the opportunity. So again, I'm able to make a calculated risk, but I actually do have the funds where I can say, look, if I set this to the side, it's not going to kill me. I'm not going to like it, right? But I can write this off on my taxes. You understand? Like, I'm savvy enough to understand how to even benefit from a loss.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas though a person who's just learning, they haven't really had the opportunity to put those pieces together yet. And so just that's reckless for so many reasons.
Yeah.
Just handing your money over like that. I've had it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I've told people no. Mm-hmm. I've had it on both sides, and it's not. Because it's like, I don't want to advance the next person. I don't want to help a person along.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually enabling you. And I don't work for you.
Yep.
I got 5 kids. I work for them. And that's a lot.
Right.
They run a tight ship.
Yeah,
kids,
yeah.
Man. So, like, just to have an adult do that. And then sometimes they're entitled, right? A project, you say it takes 6 months. Typically, it takes between 3 and 4. But let's say something goes wrong. Something's on back, or the contractor runs off. Something goes wrong. You are on the clock. Right. Mm-hmm. And this person who gave you the money is now like, where is it? I need it back.
Again,
bro, I don't have it. Like, I'm not walking around with it in my pocket. Like, mm-hmm. It's not in the bank, obviously. If that was the case, I wouldn't have taken yours. If mine was there, I would have needed yours.
Right.
And so you got your fair share of those unrealistic expectations that stem, I do heavily believe, is from social media and what people portray. But I'm telling you the truth. It could go bad before it go good. Let's hope it goes good.
Mm-hmm.
But the contingencies in the contract say maybe. Maybe not, right? But I just feel like for a person who's listening out there, don't be afraid to bet on yourself.
Like, yeah.
Sink or swim, you got it. Figure it out. Really, at the end of the day, all you have is yourself anyway. Money's a resource, but you are the person behind that tool that drives it. So,
and that's why, for me, I was so, once again, going back to it, I was so excited for this conversation because I'm speaking to someone that you're not speaking from third-person experience.
Right.
You're speaking from somebody that literally did it and is doing it every single day.
All the time.
You get this $150,000 lump sum. You walk out the financial advisor's office.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to bet on me. Let's figure this real estate thing out.
Yep.
Right? You teach a strategy now that talks a lot about helping people getting started in real estate, but being debt-free, which
yeah.
is very huge because real estate is extremely capital intensive.
Mm-hmm.
One of the strategies you leverage that's been able to afford you to be able to do so is leveraging real estate auctions.
Mm, full circle.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your introduction to the auction space. How did that ultimately come about?
Well, because I was invited. I make a running joke. I was invited to the auction. Well, obviously, when they put the notice on your door,
mm-hmm.
so you pull up.
Right.
Obviously, for me, the house didn't actually go to sell, so I was okay. But I met a really good friend. So let's go back in the story. After the real estate agent set me down with the advisor, he then set me down with an investor. This
okay.
was the first investor I ever met. Shout out to Mike. Me and Mike are still really good friends.
Dope.
And at this point, he's like, all right, I heard you want to buy houses. Because I think the agent was just trying to, like, he got his commission. He's like, yo, she got money. Like, he's just sitting me down with all of his boys. I end up sitting down with Mike. He's like, I heard you want to buy houses. How much do you have to spend? I'm green. So I'm mm-hmm. like, I have. You never know. Don't tell people how much money you have.
Right.
I did it. Mike was a great guy, though. He did not take advantage at all. Sitting at the table, it was a corner bakery. That's how we used to do it back in the day. As entrepreneurs, we meeting in a common spot that's safe with Wi-Fi.
Hilarious.
We pulling
okay.
up. Do you want hot chocolate and a biscuit? and so I told him, you know, what I had to spend and what I was looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was very young. I still look really young now. But at the time, he was like older.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, how old are you? You don't mind me asking, where'd you get this money? Like, he's trying to figure out, because I'm not coming in there with pennies. Mm-hmm. I'm like, bro, I'm ready to get down.
I got a bag back.
Girl. And so he's like, well, what happened? Like, how'd you get it? So I tell him, I sold this, yada, yada. He's like, you sold what? Mm-hmm. For how much? Where? Why? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. Your friend told me to do it, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, no, you had equity. You could have da-da-da-da-da-da. Crash course. I'm always a student all the time. I love asking questions, and I love learning new things. I got a crash course in real estate at a corner bakery.
Mm.
10, 15 minutes flat. Mental note, writing it down. Mm-hmm. This is what really sealed the deal for me, confirmation. So pay attention. Like, if something is reoccurring in your life, pay attention to it. Kind of lean into it. God will give you signs. So it was this one property out of the three that I had gotten under contract with him. We're negotiating. He was trying to sell it to me for like 12-ish or something. But one of them had a tenant in it, and I was already giving him a substantial amount. Like, contractually, I didn't hand off any money at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was this one property. We ended up negotiating back and forth. I got it down to like $6,000. So I'm already giving you like $40,000 for this one. Like, bro, work with me. He was like, all right, I got you.
Right.
$6,000, right? I'm curious. I'm like, I'm not trying to be unfair. Are you going to make anything off of this? He's like, oh, yeah, I'm not making a lot. I got it for $2,500.
$2,500?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How'd you do that? Oh, I went to the auction. Here is that word again, auction. Who are these people?
Right.
And what do they do?
Mm-hmm.
So that piqued my interest past the point of just the notice and understanding that they sell things. Because in my mind, they were selling it because the debt was extensive, right? I think the taxes on it may have been like 30 or something. The taxes were high. So I just kind of equated auction, selling high properties for high numbers, right? But when I sat down with him and he was able to sell me a property contractually, you know, $6,000. I'm like, where you get this from? Why so cheap? And it's a house. This is not a lot. This is not a parcel of land. This is a house with floors, a roof, walls.
Mm-hmm.
He said the auction. I'm like, bet, that's it. I'm going to see what's up. Because I'm already on a hunt to, like, figure some things out. Also, I left with some newfound knowledge. Mm-hmm. So now I'm knowing about equity and, like, all of the things. So his girlfriend agreed to go with me. Shout out to Stephanie. She's like a sister to me. We talk all the time still.
Girl.
And she had this whole thing going on. Like, she would look up the properties, figure out the RIT number, the book number, figure out the debt on it, figure out the ARV so you don't bid past a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
I was young and reckless. We went together just one day, and it was like literally fate. I was driving, got there late. She was like, we missed half of the sale. I was like, we still going to go. I'm here. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
We go. She has this book, like a binder. Stephanie is so organized, man. Mm-hmm. If you listen to this, Stephanie, like, you give me anxiety. She was super organized. She had it like all planned out. And she was like, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. I went in there and did whatever. I did not look at that book. I did not. Like, I heard her subconsciously, but I just kind of went with my gut. First auction property I won was $1,700. $1,700. Now, I do one better. It wasn't because it was so cheap that I was like, yay, because I could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
It was when I went to pay for it. Mm-hmm. They didn't even accept the money. They was like, oh, no, just a deposit here. At the time, it was 10% or 600, whichever is highest. It's still 10% in most auctions.
Okay.
The minimum now was like 1,000 instead of 6, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So 1,700, give her the $600 down.
Mm.
I have 30 days to pay the balance.
Mm.
I'm one of those people. Like I said, I'm an expander.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an enhancer. I'm an edifier. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. I always find the hole in the middle that needs to be filled. There is always a hole in the middle.
Right.
30 days to pay the balance. Now, that one I paid off. I bought it. I have it. I still have it now.
Awesome.
But I was realizing that 30 days is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I could put a deposit down and then sell it
mm-hmm.
for more than I owe for profit. This is called wholesaling.
Mm-hmm.
But my first wholesale lesson, right? Because, again, this is all full circle stuff. I was on a hunt for properties. So now, being as though the real estate agent introduced me to Mike, who is a real estate investor, I know the difference between agent and investor,
mm-hmm.
right? Everything's experience-based now.
Right.
I'm now looking for other investors. Me and agents, I don't really feel agents because y'all playing now. I don't like how he was getting down a little bit, right? So now I'm on Instagram looking for everyone who had investor in their name or bio.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, they still had, like, the people you know or the people you may want to follow. I'm looking at one investor, and I'm just looking at all their friends. Like, literally, who do you follow? What do they do? Click, 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 click. Like, I'm doing it.
Right.
I run into this guy. He's an investor. We're still really good friends, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I was so green. I did some crazy things. So, anyway, he's showing his property. I want to go see it. I schedule a showing. I show up. Two other females show up. We're here. I'm like, I want it. right?
Just like that.
I want it. I have money in my pocket. Not all of it, but like, here's my down payment. I want it. Mm-hmm. And it had to be like $3,000, $4,000 cash because I still am processing how this whole process works.
Right.
I want it. He's like, no. Put your money away. That's not, I'm going to give it, it's cool. It's cool because the people who are there were wholesalers too, I'm assuming. I'm still pretty connected to those girls too. It was so funny. Everything just kind of was a ripple effect. Anyway, take this money, get them out of here. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, this is what I need. But that was another turnkey. I realized because the house I bought for $6,000, it was terrible. Treehouse, it was ugly. I was like, mm-hmm. I don't like those ones. So mm-hmm. give me the ones that I can like make some income off right away.
Right.
And so anyway, met that guy, did our thing. He's like, I'm seeing the contract. We're going to go through this whole process. Meet me at the title company. Like, we're going through the motions.
Right.
I get to closing a few weeks thereafter, and he's off to the when I tell a story, we laugh. The number changes every time. But long story short, Reek is off to the side, mm-hmm. eating a bag of chips. Me and this other guy are at the closing table together, signing the documents, the deed, all of these things. And I'm like, are you guys partners? Reek like, no. I'm a wholesaler. That's the owner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, huh? I'm a wholesaler. He's the owner. What does that mean? Like, what is happening here? Like, mm-hmm. right? He pulled a HUD out. He like, you see this? This was the assignment. I'm not even going to say the number now because Reek, like, every time I do an interview, he like, was it 15 or was it 20? I'm like, my first wholesale lesson was expensive, whatever it was.
There you go.
But yeah, so at that moment, he said, so I got under contract with the seller. And then I end up finding a buyer for it. And I'm the middleman. I get paid in between. He just showed up and got a check. I don't even think Reek signed any papers that day, but that's how I learned wholesaling. Mm-hmm. So now when I'm at the auction and they're like, put this down and come back later, I'm like, I ain't even got to hunt down the seller. Mm-hmm. I can get my inventory for this from this place. And then, you know, selling it on the back end shouldn't really be difficult because I'm getting these properties so low below market value. Like any auction now, even higher, like you think about it. There's an auction in San Diego. I have clients all over now. She's in San Diego, $20,000. $50,000, $60,000, which is great when in San Diego you should be paying $200,000, $300,000 for a house. So the auction is not just about, first of all, there's a variety of auctions, but the auction is not just about getting properties for $1,000 and $2,000. Mm-hmm. I still do that now too, depending on the area. But the overall value and benefit of an auction is to purchase it below its market value.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that was it. Knock 'em dead, Monopoly. I start playing it just like that.
Hey, business owners, what if I told you that for just 90 cents a day, you could get access to $45,000 in business funding? I just launched my Credit Mastery community where inside you're going to be getting exclusive access to our in-depth training program worth tens of thousands of dollars that's going to teach you the exact strategies you need on how to restore your credit and on how to properly structure your business. You're also going to be getting access to a financial consultant with over a decade of experience in the funding space that's going to be working with you to reach your financial goals in half the time it would take if you were to do it on your own. And we're going to be providing you 2 coaching calls a week where we're going to teach you the exact banks that you need to go to get access to anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000 in business funding. This is the same community that helped Pat access $50,000 in funding from Chase, help Alvin get $8,000 in funding from Amex, help Matt boost his credit score by over 150 points, and help Donna delete a bankruptcy from her credit report. So if you're interested, click the link above or below the video to join now, and we'll see you on the other side of success. Let's go, family.
Just like that. And from there, you've been hitting the ground running since.
Correct.
So let's unpack the auction side of things as well, because that was your intro to real estate.
Correct.
And it's played a tremendous role in a lot of success you've had now. And mm-hmm. it may potentially play a tremendous role in someone else's life who's watching this right now, who's an aspiring investor. How exactly do, if I'm an aspiring investor, I don't know diddly nothing, learning from your expertise, how exactly do the auctions work when it comes to me acquiring my first real estate investment property?
I would say step one is to choose the correct auction. So you have a variety. You have tax delinquent, which is literally like property taxes. You have a tax lien, which is you may have owed the IRS and they're seizing any asset that you may have mm-hmm. up to and including real estate. You have judicial sales, which is you may have gotten into some other quarrel. Somebody may have sued you and they're going after your assets. You have mortgage foreclosure, which is the obvious, the one we hear most about. Somebody didn't pay their mortgage and mm-hmm. it's going to sell for that. You have seizure auctions. Something may have taken place in which the feds may have raided something, a drug bust, whatever. They're selling it. You have estate auctions, what you think about probate. Nobody came to claim it. We have to get rid of it.
Right.
You have tax deeds, which is a little different. You're like first priority lien holder on a property, and the original owner then has to pay that lien and up and including, you know, whatever debt they may have had to get that back. So there's a variety. The way that I say an aspiring investor shall choose is by my checklist.
Okay.
What is my opening bid? Like, how much would a bid start at?
Okay.
What is the deposit amount that I have to put down? How long do I have to pay the balance? Will I win the property and actually own it when I get it? Or am I like first priority lien holder? I stay away from those.
Okay.
What is the right of redemption and what is the terms? So typically the right of redemption is the owner of record's ability to reclaim their property. Like, hey, I wasn't served or whatever. So they can come back and get their property. Sometimes it's 9 months. Sometimes it's 3 months. Sometimes it's 30 days. Sometimes it's non-existent. Mm-hmm. But I need to know what that time frame looks like. And I need to know what the stipulations are. Typically, they have to give you whatever you purchased it for at 10% interest. So okay. Your acquisition price along with interest. If you put any money into it, they're usually required to pay you back that as well. That's not always the case, but most of the time. Mm-hmm. That's my sweet spot. If that's it, fine. Because if you had all that money to give to me, you probably would have paid your debt and we wouldn't be here. So that's not a deal breaker. But for the other ones that are a little more lenient, I kind of stay away from. How long until the deed is recorded? I need to know that so I can get my title insurance on it.
Okay.
A lot of people are afraid because they're like, you can't get title insurance on auction properties. You can, but just after the fact. And there are select companies who will do it. Other title companies don't know because they can't guarantee the deed. Next thing on a checkpoint is also, will I get this property free of liens and encumbrances? Some auctions do guarantee that. Other auctions do not. They say, hey, we make no claim or warranty or guarantee on this property. You get what you get, right? So when I'm doing a checklist, is it mine? How much am I going to have to pay? When am I going to have to pay it? What am I really getting myself into? That's kind of what my checklist is derivatory of. Once you find the correct auction that you want to go to, just execute. Like, I didn't know rhyme or reason, but when you think about it and you're buying something, worst case scenario, you're stuck with a house. Like, if it meets all of my requirements, I already know I'm good to go. Worst case, I am stuck with an entire asset, right? Best case, I sell it. I make some money. That's it. Don't love the first property for new investors. I always say flip to build capital. Like, get that one and sell it. A lot of people, this is the first time I ever owned anything. It's mine. I want to keep it. I want to love it. If you don't have the money and you can't afford to keep it, get rid of it to make more money. This is not the only time this is going to happen to you. There's an auction everywhere. Just go back. Some people are like, I love it. Yo, you got to pay taxes on it. You got to fix it up. You know, what's your plan for it moving forward? So having a good plan. What else? Yeah, pretty much flip to build capital for sure. Because everybody thinks a flip is like DIY. Mm-hmm. Buy it. Fix it. No, you can just sell it as is for more money. That's a flip. A flip is purchasing something for one amount, selling it for more than you purchased it for a profit. What else auction-wise? I think that's it, really. I think people just overcomplicate it.
How do we, what are resources we can use to even find, because there are auctions in every city and state across. What are some of the different websites that you would recommend that we could actually look to find these auctions in the first place?
They're county-based, not state-based.
Okay.
So just make your local municipality.
Gotcha.
That's it. That's the place. Not auction.com, not Zillow Foreclosure, not foreclosure.com. Those do have accurate intel, but it's only accurate up to a certain point, right? So they'll have the addresses of what's for sale, but they won't have the actual checkpoint information that I said that you should be looking for. Your municipality has a responsibility to release that said information, whereas auction.com does not.
I'm curious, for me, one of the things I'm curious about is like, because I'm hearing you tell your story and it's like purchasing houses for $1,700 and $3,000, all these ridiculously low numbers. And I'm sure the county or the city knows that, like, hey, whoever buys this is going to be able to make ridiculous money themselves once they get it. Why is it that the city themselves don't just hold on to the property and sell it for a lot more than what they allow for it to go for at these auctions?
Because we live in America. That's the honest answer for me. Everything is about, like, economic gain here.
Okay.
And so selling it for more does make sense until you think about it like this. Would you rather me give you $1 million now, or would you rather me give you $100,000 every week for the rest of your life?
Oh, I'm taking a second option.
Why?
Taking a second option. That's everlasting money. That's passive income that's just coming in. I'm
correct.
Chilling.
And then if I can no longer pay you, My daughter over there is then responsible for paying you. You understand? I can resell this property 50 times, but I would like the consistency of regenerating income over and over and over. The moment they sell a property to you, you're responsible for property tax. Win, lose, or draw. You're never not going to pay them.
Right.
Ever, right? So, yes, I'm going to sell it to you at a discounted rate because I have to get rid of it. And sometimes, too, the more inventory they have, because I think it's one of those things where they're looking for volume. And so the more properties they have, typically they sell them lower. When you get to these quaint towns that have, like, maybe 5 or 10, they'll hit you in the head. Like, they'll do it. It's not that it doesn't happen. But, again, that's why choosing the correct auction matters. But I think it's just more so making that property or that piece of land profitable again. Because you're going to always pay taxes. You always have to pay taxes. Right. And if you don't, guess what? I get to resell it again. Over and over and over. You're going to always pay me and or.
Someone else is going to pay me.
And I'm going to get that lump sum again. And then, yeah. So I'm going to, that's my logic behind it. I've never really officially asked anyone. But I did have a really in-depth conversation with a clerk one time. It was a situation going on where. An investor, because I used to take people to auctions, but there was an investor who were taking people to a specific auction, and what they were buying was a little different than what was advertised. And I was like, well, why don't you stop this from happening? Because she was like, worst case scenario, we're just going to have to resell it. But, like, her mind was impartial because the overall end goal for her was to sell that property and generate income over and over. Like, no matter who buys it, no matter what's going on, their bottom line is to make their bottom line. So,
is it true that at one point in time you actually... You actually had your own auction?
Oh, it was terrible. It is very true. I did it.
Okay, what happened to that?
It was a lot of work. Okay. I'm a visionary. I had, like, a really big goal and dream behind it. So, what was it? COVID came. The world shut down, so to speak. The auction shut down. I was taking anywhere between 20 to 30 people, and it was just me and like, my assistant, but really small team, and we was taking 20 to 30 people, and they were getting these properties for $600, and we were helping them sell it, so we were seeing them through the entire process, and we had these people, like, believing in us. I think we talked a little bit about enabling a little earlier in the show, and they just, I was helping people, and they were bringing more people for me to help, and it got really big and expansive, and then it came to a halt until... I know somebody who does, like, a storage, I forgot exactly what it's called. They do storage things. And so you can hire an auctioneer. I'm putting the pieces together. So auctioneer can auction off anything, anything. But I know wholesalers, they have inventory. I'm going to go on Zoom. I'm going to hire you to auction off these properties. I'm going to get the inventory in. So now I'm bridging a gap, much like what I do now. When I have really wealthy and successful clients, certain money they have to give away philanthropy-wise for tax reasons. I have certain investors who are brand new who needs, like, down payment money on certain things. I'm bridging a gap there. I kind of did the same thing with this idea, and it was a brilliant idea. It just felt kind of short because the inventory was iffy, and it was this one guy. Oh, I feel like that's what broke the whole thing, and I could have kept it going. Like, it wasn't, like, a terrible thing. I just, in my spirit, felt defeated and didn't want to do it again. So it was this guy. He's selling his entire portfolio. Older, he has over 100 properties. He's ready. He's ready to go. He's buying an apartment building in Florida. That's where he's relocating to. I have his estate under contract. You understand? He trusts me. Great guy. I have his estate under contract. He's ready to rock and roll. He has his apartment complex under contract. He's ready to go. He's doing what's called a 1031 exchange. What that is literally just like a tax-deferred strategy where as long as you can roll your profits directly into a new investment, you don't have to pay taxes on it for a certain amount of time. What happens is the guy, he was selling the apartment complex, was going through a divorce. It happened within the middle of our negotiating, all of that stuff. The guy's like, I can't sell this a complex to you right now during my divorce. I don't know if it's because the wife was going to take it. Like, I'm not sure. I can imagine his reasoning for wanting to push pause on a deal. But in the interim, this guy pushed pause on selling his stuff because he would have been taxed severely on it. Because we're talking about a few million dollars upward. So you can imagine losing, a hundred and something properties in your inventory. I was deflated because now I'm scrambling. And I'm like, we need properties. Already paid for the title searches, the lawyers, the auctioneer. I already, like, did all of that stuff. And the auction was going good. I did probably like a 3 series. The first one was really successful. That was good. The second and third one started to get rocky. The second one is when I realized I wasn't secure enough in my position to do it. Unless I started selling my own stuff. And I need what's mine. I don't want to, you know. sell my inventory. And so by the third one, I was like, yo, I can't. I'm sorry. Like, and it's not you guys. I love you guys. It's not that I don't want to give you the opportunity, because people were like, you want to keep the houses all to yourself. You have enough. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm a firm believer of quitting while you're ahead, because it could have got really, really bad. And I think even with a lot of, like, scammers, their word is used so loosely. I feel like we give people too much credit. These people are not scammers. They're just people who have poor planning and poor execution.
Facts.
Right? Like, they get in too deep, and they don't know when to call it quits. It's okay to scale back and re-strategize. It's okay to take a corner. Boxers do it all the time, right? And I just think for me, I realized what was going on, and I realized how bad it could get. And it was a lot at stake there, especially we talked about the entitlement of people and everybody. Well, I want the $2,000 properties. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, I can only do that if I have a mass volume of I don't have it to give to you.
Right.
So now I could teach you how to wholesale. Now I'm going to dissect the whole process so you can go do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they don't want to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. They want you to do it for them. And it was one of the best ideas. I'm really good at coming up with ideas, so I'm sure that's not going to be the only amazing thing I come up with. But it was one of the best ideas that I had in a long time. I was really proud of myself for, like, even being able to pull it together.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like the experience. I was stressed. Not gonna lie. I was burnt out.
When we talk about debt-free real estate investing, I've heard you... What's interesting is, for anyone who's an aspiring real estate investor, if they go on YouTube right now, they don't know nothing about real estate, and they say, how do I buy my first property? 9.9 times out of 10, the first 5 to 6 videos that are going to pop up on YouTube are going to be something around, like, how to use Burr to invest in real estate.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, I've heard you on a couple other platforms talk about you not necessarily being the biggest fan of that.
No.
I'm curious to know, right now we're in 2024, going into 2025, if I'm a newer investor, because I really want to help those individuals who are trying to really get their foot in the door, why they should potentially stay away from going the Burr method for getting into real estate, whether they're doing it in 2024 or going into 2025.
Okay, so first we have to give an understanding of what Burr is. You buy, you rehab, you rent it out, you refinance, and you repeat the process.
Yeah.
So it's much like a domino effect. One property then covers the next. That property then covers the next, so forth and so on, as many times as you would like.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is if there is a compromised chain within that whole line, everything else then becomes compromised unless you have the sufficient capital to keep it afloat.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are not responsible or not knowledgeable enough to know what to do with that money once they pull it out. Like, as an investor, regardless if you're doing Burr or not, you should have reserves, right? You should have, like, some money set aside for just maintenance costs and all those things. Even people who don't use debt at all, you should definitely have a contingency fund or, like, a tenant landlord account if something goes wrong for you to fix said property. People are just out here making money, going shopping.
Yeah.
Like anything else, being a landlord is a business. Shopping is good. I like shopping, right? But not at the expense of my entire empire.
Right.
So you have to have that money. Now, the thing about Burr is that if not done correctly, one bad deal or situation with the property can cost you your entire... Because you're thinking about it. Once you refinance that property, you now have a mortgage on it.
Mm.
And then you use that money to buy another one, and you refi it again. You now have a mortgage on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you use that money to buy another one, you refi it again. You understand? And so what happens is that first mortgage, if a tenant stops paying, if a fire happens, if any unforeseen circumstance happens with that first property, you must have the reserves to make sure that mortgage still gets paid.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be pulling funds from the rest of the chain and kind of get the weakest link concept. And so for me, for inexperienced investors, I kind of feel like Warren Buffett feels like this too, but don't test the depths of the water with 2 feet. I got it from him.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Don't bite off more than you can chew.
Do you feel the same way about the FHA loan?
No, I feel like... if you're responsible with money and you have a plan, it's like how I look at credit. I've had an 800 credit score. I've had a 400 credit score.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to use the money responsibly, it's all one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
The 800 credit score, you're really responsible with paying your bills. But if you're not leveraging it, if you're not using the money to make you more money, all you're doing is paying debt. See, debt is inevitable. That's the thing.
Right.
somewhere along your life, you're going to owe someone something. Mm-hmm. But you can really minimize how much you owe any person, right? And so FHA, yes, if you need help getting your first house, you don't want to buy a fixer-upper, you don't want to do it, great, go for it. Use it responsibly. Why would you, especially if you're like looking at your hood, why would you buy a FHA property or buy a property using FHA and then take your 30-year mortgage and be paying double on the loan amount? You might have gotten a $300,000 house, but if you look at that number with the interest, you're paying six, typically, depending on the interest rate. It could be five. Mm. But you got a loan for $300,000, but you owe five. That's not even good math.
Right.
But people don't look at it. If I pay the principal down, make extra payments, I'm cutting my interest in half because you're only charged interest on what you owe. If you lessen what you owe or reduce what you owe, the interest changes. Mm-hmm. The amount then changes.
Yep.
Right? People are like, why would I pay extra money? I'm only doing what I'm responsible for. You're not the mentality. I'm just showing up so I don't get fired. Do it the right way. Mm-hmm. When people talk about, you know, buying your first home, it's a beautiful experience. Mm-hmm. It's worth it. But it's just as well as a liability as it is an asset when you first do it. You live there. It's doing nothing but costing you money. Mm-hmm. And even if you have equity in it, the equity, for people who are listening, newbies, equity is the value of something minus any debt that you may owe on said value. Mm-hmm. I keep forgetting they're over there. Hi, guys. I haven't looked at you all day. Hi. Yeah, so with that being said, unless you plan on cracking open that piggy bank, mm-hmm. you just got equity.
Right.
People talk about, I have equity. Unless you are intended to get into more debt, mm-hmm. screw your equity.
Right.
Dude, like, you know? So I feel like FHA could be good if you have a plan. I think you should have a plan with everything. Mm-hmm. Some people are just following the social norms based off of, like, societal rules. Like, finish college, get a home, do all of these things, but they're not questioning why. Mm-hmm. And if I'm being honest, the system wasn't designed for us. It was designed against us. And we're feeding into the bigger monster, which is the banking system. Like, we're feeding into this and not questioning why. Right. And we're not benefiting from it in the meantime either. So I'm not against FHA. Do what works for you, but make sure it's working for you. Mm-hmm. Not just giving you a nice place to stay. Make sure it's actually working for you. Mm-hmm. So BRRRR, no. FHA, maybe, right? Because you can do what we did. I got a really good pre-foreclosure mansion, if you will. Mm-hmm. Pre-foreclosure. Nothing was wrong with it. Husband and wife going through divorce. Mm-hmm. Couldn't sell it. We painted it. I made it girly, really nice. Did some things to it. $300,000 or $400,000 in equity. We bought it with it in mm-hmm. there already. Haven't touched it yet. But that could be a great retirement plan.
Right.
One day we 70, 80, crack it and living off of that because you can't get taxed on debt. It's a great idea. But again, I have a plan for it.
Right.
And before I jumped out of the window, like, I'm making money now. I can afford an $800,000 house. Let me go get it. I did not. We had, like, over 10 tenants, I believe. Like, 9, 10 tenants. Mm-hmm. It was still somebody else's tenant. Mm-hmm. It was okay. The rent was, like, $1,850. So, mm-hmm. like, yeah. And we weren't responsible for maintenance. I love that. Mm-hmm. But past a certain point, renting doesn't make sense. So, mm-hmm. I can see a person wanting to buy. But just understand you have options
right.
as to how you buy. It's not what you do ever. It's always how you do it.
The biggest risk that most entrepreneurs take is trying to build a successful business without funding. But that risk is a reality for one out of every three entrepreneurs because their personal credit isn't where it needs to be in order for them to access that capital. Now, the truth is you can close the gap between where your business is versus where you want it to be by leveraging business credit, but if your personal credit report is poor, 99% of banks and lenders are going to deny you from doing so. And I should know, because a couple of years ago, I leveraged my personal credit report to get funding from Chase to start my company. And now that very same company, Takeoff Financial, is serving entrepreneurs just like you that are looking to restore their credit to get access to 5 to 6 figures in funding. So if you want to go from risk to reward, click the link above or below this video to schedule your free consultation so that we can restore your credit and put you in position to access capital to build the business of your dreams.
When we talk about how you buy, I think what's also interesting is you have a lot of, the more I looked into, you have a lot of very interesting ways that you've been able to acquire property. We talked about the auctions.
Yep.
We talked about your stance on, you know, FHA versus, like, you know, BRRRR.
Yep.
You've used life insurance to acquire properties.
Several times. I've used life insurance to acquire several things, though.
I think a Tesla as well, if I'm also correct.
I like it. Now I want to use it to get my Aston Martin, but that's different.
Talk about how you've been able to use life insurance to actually buy real estate, because I've never heard that before.
Just borrowing against your life benefit. Just that simple.
To take a step back, how does that work? Because even now, I'm sure you see it, like, that's also, like, another buzzword within, like, wealth building and things of that nature when it comes to how exactly does life insurance, and I know you're not, but how does life work? Because I've heard you talk about, like, building cash value and, like, IUL versus whole. Mm. So a quick crash course on how that would work if we wanted to use it for real estate purposes.
So the process in itself is referred to as infinite banking.
Okay.
If your policy is written correctly, well, you have borrowing you have borrowing power on all life insurance policies. Mm-hmm. If your policy is written correctly, that then spells out what you can borrow, when you can borrow, like how much of it, you know, is able to be borrowed. Typically, people are starting out wrong. Again, the I'm here so I don't get fired mentality. Their life insurance is $5 a month. Mm-hmm. Well, ain't nothing in there. Mm-hmm. You got $2 to borrow, right? Because I was already investing in cash, putting that lump sum in the policy feeds it. Mm-hmm. So now I have more access to the capital. I put it all in there up front. But the thing is, I was going to spend that same $100,000 on a house anyway. I was going to spend that same, God bless you.
Thank you.
I was going to spend that same however amount of money anyway.
Right.
The thing about money is we spend it.
Mm-hmm.
We might say we don't spend it, but we spend it. I was having a conversation with a really good friend of mine. Can't remember when, but we were just talking about like investing the money and people being afraid to put large amounts of money away.
Mm-hmm.
You are spending it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You are spending it. It's just, even if it's a drip, it can run up a water bill.
Yep.
That's how I say it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not afraid to put my money somewhere that at least will yield a return for me versus people just holding on to it in a fearful thought process. I'm like, yo, if I put it in a house, at least my money's coming back, even if it's over time. There's never going to be a time that I'm alive that I don't need money.
Yeah.
Right? And one day, once I make it past the threshold, this is when we go into cap rates and everything. When I make it past the threshold, I'll then be making more than I even put out. Mm-hmm. How does that not make sense? Mm-hmm. It makes sense. So when it comes to life insurance, you need it. One day you will die. If you want people to bury you responsibly, you might want to do that. There's nothing more than an investment in yourself, though.
Right.
I come from a lineage. I was raised by my elders. And so my great-grandma has always had life insurance on anybody. She may have a policy on you if she saw you on YouTube. Like, she just puts policies on people because everybody deserves to be buried is her philosophy. Her with her policies, though, she did it from a point of, like, not negligence, but I'm going to say ignorance. She didn't know about how the system was designed and why the system was designed. I implore you guys, the new Jim Crow was by Mary L. Heen, I believe. I implore you guys to just do like a quick search on where life insurance actually came from.
Mm.
Slave owners had insurance policies on us while we were slaves. If the slave was injured and or killed, because again, we are money making assets. So you can insure anything that make, right?
Right.
And so once the slaves were officially freed, they created a new form of life insurance for newly working class people. Well, who's newly getting a job? Besides the people who can now work, right? And they created that type of burial insurance, which is why sometimes older people will have burial insurance and they'll be paying for 25 years, but the payout would be like $10,000. You're like, what? She been paying this? Because this is when the insurance man would come sit at my table on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew my insurance man. I think that same company is still with my grandma, and they send somebody else out now, but whatever. You wouldn't really understand why a person was putting in so much and getting back so little, and it was literally just all outlined by how the policy itself was written.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not an insurance agent. Some insurance agents love me. Some of them hate me. Do your research. Find the right one. It's infinite banking. Pay the cash value up and you can borrow it. You get you don't get taxed on it. I'm sorry. It's tax-free, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
You get interest on it, though. They pay you to have your money in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that system was made and the way that I use it, it was for the elite. Like, we focus a lot on racism. I'm not political at all, but we really just went through a really crazy, crucial election period. And everybody was focused on black or white and in gender. And the bigger thing here is classism. It has nothing to do with any of those other things. It was always the have and have nots, no matter what color you were.
Mm.
Now, color does play a factor in, like, certain socioeconomic, you know, things. But for the most part, you get what you pay for, and money is power in any room. Like, you can look at me and feel like I don't belong here, but if I can afford a seat at the table, can't a person move my chair? Because my dollar helps to circulate the overall machine, and it's all about that. And so when you think about it, study what wealthy people do with their money. Insurance. You think about the Rockefellers. I all made a joke once. We spoke at the Kentucky Derby a few years back, and I was like, hey, has anybody ever heard of the book, What Would the Rockefellers Do? Mm-hmm. And everybody's like raising their hand, and we get into a nice little chat about them. I said, does anybody know what Rockefeller actually looks like John mm-hmm. himself? They're like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know his name, though. Mm-hmm. His name is still buzzing today.
Yeah.
He's been dead yep. for a really long time. I've had the pleasure of actually meeting, and I don't even know how long the line of descendants are, but I met a Rockefeller. I don't know if it was one of the Rockefellers, mm-hmm. but whatever, right? Just the lineage there, the mm-hmm. history there, all because of insurance.
Yep.
So we can speak about the history. We can say things about it, but we don't want to participate in it or learn how it works. Because clearly it works mm-hmm. if we are still talking about the Rockefellers. Clearly. Yeah. And I just think if a lot of the things that we do know is like right in our face, but a lot of people don't participate in it mm-hmm. Due to lack of understanding or fear. Because that's one of those things. We just don't belong. It's not for me. Like, a lot of people like to play it safe. And I get it until you realize, like, how reckless you are living in your safe, meaning you dedicate all your life and work to a job. That's not safe. Mm-hmm. That job can bankrupt and they can fire you. Like, Facts. That's not safe.
Right.
You think it's safe because you have a safety net. Mm-hmm. That's not safe, dude. Like, you're putting your life and the lives of the people you love in someone else's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And we all, what, Social Security, pension? It's nothing to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Unemployment, it's nothing to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And then what, you go find another job and do it all again? There's nothing safe about that. Especially when God gives us talents. There's nothing that we were born with that can't be used to create. I don't believe that. I think cliche, everybody's special in their own way, but I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a need for everything in this world, which is why I was designed and created.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who are capable of anything you can think of. They're just not using that talent
mm-hmm.
to better the world or better themselves. And so they're trusting somebody else, much like you said, with an investor. I'm giving you my money. Make it happen. It's like, hey, I'm giving you my time and effort. Make it happen to the boss mm-hmm. or CEO of a company. And obviously, there's bosses and there's workers and there is like a chain of command and we do need each other. I'm just saying, maximize every opportunity you're in. Don't ever like diminish your own value because you're like overcasted by a larger shadow. I've never been that girl.
I love it.
Yeah.
I know we have to start closing because we got to get you out of here. Before we do, I think it would be imperative for me to ask this as a closing question. You know, with a lot of what you've been able to do this far, we talked about it a little bit off camera, for whether it's owning over 500 plus acres of land, the individuals you've been able to help and mentor in this space and beyond. You have a quote where you said, generational wealth is not built by passing down assets. It's built by work, which is an acronym that you created.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom, opportunity, resources, and knowledge.
Yep. So, which is now a nonprofit.
There you go. So for where we are now,
right.
And for where you are now, what does the work look like for you going into 2025 moving forward?
Extreme awareness and a really high level of intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about work and how I outlined it when I was originally tasked with writing my paper was everything that I ever did was work. And one of those two, if not more, words were present at the same time. Mm-hmm. So like grandmom passed, it was the opportunity, like the opportunity to be able to sell a house. But the wisdom to know, not to sell grandmom's house. Like I could have listened to that, but right. My wisdom let me know, girl, no, like this is what you should be doing.
Right.
That was the W and the O. Obviously I sold it, R, resources, because now you got money. I educated myself. It was like knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge and wisdom, they're kind of like two different sides of the same coin. Because I knew not to sell it to the contractor who offered me cash out of a trunk.
Mm-hmm.
I knew to go with someone like Berkshire because if nothing else, this is a reputable company. I can Google them. I can sue them. Mm-hmm. If everything goes wrong, I can read really well so I can comprehend. The contract is pretty cut and dry. You know what I mean? But the knowledge to know or the wisdom to know, hey, don't sell that to the guy up the street. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Right? So for me at this stage in my life is being aware of which of those is present and which I should use in those opportunities. Like, okay, does this situation require the W, the O, the R, or the K?
Mm-hmm.
Does this require two? Does this require three?
Mm-hmm.
If so, which one should go first? So I pray all the time. That's where my wisdom comes from. Like, that's my source. All right, God, this is a situation. What should I do about it? The opportunity is always present. I don't look for them. They just bloop. But God, what do you want me to do with this opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
Makes all the difference. Because sometimes we have a great idea and we should be going this way. But in all honesty, God wanted us to go that way.
Yeah.
And so opportunity is always there. I feel like, oh, it's just like ever present. It just kind of lingers. But the wisdom to kind of understand, and then leaving space for the knowledge to like enter and intertwine, because sometimes I have to assess what I'm about to do and learn about it specifically. That's why I'm really good with my clients, because it's individualized. It's not a one set, a one size fit all thing, even if there is like a common ground amongst them. And so for me, like these days, like I said, paying attention, seeing where the opportunity or what the opportunity is, assessing it so I can figure out what's needed for me at that time for the best outcome for all parties involved.
I love it. Dr. Yeah. Bennett, I know we got to get you out of here. I appreciate this conversation that we had.
It was a
conversation that was long overdue, to say the least. And I'm potentially looking forward to another one. Before we get you out of here, I know you're not really the biggest fan of like internet and Instagram and things and beyond.
Yeah.
But for those who want to stay connected with you, your camera there, let them know where they can find you and what you have going on.
Okay, for the times I want to be found.
So the times I want to be found.
Rosebuds Investments is my Instagram, my Facebook, LinkedIn. It's just my name. So you didn't ask. Rosebuds Investments was named after my grandmom, guys. Her name was Rose.
There you go,
and so, yeah, you can find me there. I have a website, www.rosebuzzinvestments.com. And, I'm giving out free copies of What Would the Rockefellers Do? So you DM the word Marvin.
I'll take it. Yeah, sure.
I give a book. I'm not super salesy. That's why I was like, where's your internet? I'm like, why? What do they want from me? Giving out books for the people who watch, because I think that knowledge is key to everything. There's nothing you can't accomplish. There's nothing you can't do when you have a solid foundation of just like the how. I think that blueprint is so important for anything that you do. And I do think it's worth being done.
There you go. Couldn't have said it better myself. And ladies and gentlemen, for all of you who have watched, if you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second. Take a minute. Take an hour out of your day right here, right now, to go ahead, hit the like button and show this episode some love. Tell a friend to tell a friend to come back and rewatch it again. As always, my name is Marvin Francois. This is Dr. Jamisa Bennett. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. Thank you all, and God bless. Peace.